And very good afternoon to you. The time is 12:07, and you're tuned to Midday Matters here on 89.1 FM WBOI. I'm Sean Beter, very happy to be with you on this Monday. Joining me in studio, as usual, it's Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel. Bob, how are you doing this afternoon?
Pretty good. Good to be here.
Pretty good. I'll take that any day. Joining us in studio as well is Karen Francisco from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. Karen, thanks very much for being with us again.
Thanks for having me.
And as you heard in the billboard today, we're going to be talking with Indiana Superintendent of Public Instruction-elect Glenda Ritz about the future of education in Indiana. And of course, we want to invite you, our listeners, to join us today. If you have a question or comment for Glenda Ritz, do give us a call. The number is 260-452-1185, or you can always call us toll-free, of course, 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's at @middaymatters. Joining us on the phone now, this is Superintendent of Public Instruction-elect Glenda Ritz. Ms. Ritz, thank you very much for being with us today.
Good afternoon to everyone.
We of course, will be hearing a lot from our listeners over the course of this hour, but I wanted to start actually with Karen Francisco talking about, well, the big election just a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I would like for you to talk about how you did this. A lot of people seem to be very surprised by the results, and I believe it's been, has it been 44 years? Is that correct?
42
years since a Democrat was elected to this position, in what was a big Republican year in Indiana. Talk about how you did it, at what point you really saw the tide turning, and just what led up to those Election Day results.
I'll be happy to do that. I think some people find it hard that it was actually organized and orchestrated. We knew that our opponent was going to have a lot of money, and we wanted to run a really good, sound grassroots campaign, kind of under the radar. So that's what we set out to do. And we started out with something simple to raise money and to get the word out. It's called Campaign in a Box. And if you donated $25 to the campaign, you got a yard sign delivered to you, 20 postcards to tell your family and friends, and 5 bumper stickers to pass out. And so we started from there. And then we obviously had a lot of coalitions all around the state. You know, I had education groups that were contacting me. We had, you know, music associations. We had a lot of parent-organized groups across the state of Indiana. And so the word started to spread slowly and surely, and it got speed. We had a huge social network campaign going. And so that just kept getting larger and larger. And about a month out, I really felt confident that we had the numbers to win, because I was the one that was around the state, you know, seeing the energy that was going on. And so I was actually confident a month out. And that was before, you know, we had all the postcards going out. About 100,000 postcards went out from educators and parent groups. And these were not mailers. We did not do a single mailer in our campaign. We did print postcards, though, large postcards, and people wrote their hand notes on them, and they mailed them out themselves. So we had money savings, you know, that way. And then we had just enough money at the end, the last few weeks, to do cable, news, advertising, and then to do actually we did nano-targeting on the computer. We did phoning, and we had you know, radio. We had 80 different stations statewide. So we had just enough money to do a really good grassroots campaign, and I was very excited about it.
In terms of that, the money, you were vastly outspent by your opponent. What about these people who are now saying it was the Indiana State Teachers Association that's responsible for your win?
Well, let's look at the Indiana State Teachers Association. First of all, it's made up of individual teachers. So you have individual teachers who have given money to the political action part of the ISTA. And so, yes, we were supported by both teacher groups, the Indiana Federation of Teachers as well. But let's talk about all the associations that did not have a formal endorsement process. The music associations, you know, the school boards associations, the superintendents, the principals, the special education coalitions. And then we have several coalitions throughout the state, you know, that were formed on behalf of public education. That, you know, all those individual people of those groups, too, gave their money. So I think I was pretty much elected by individuals who really cared about public education.
And of course, we do want to invite our listeners to join the conversation this hour. The number, if you have a question or comment, 260-452-1185, or you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Of course, our Facebook page and Twitter accounts are also up, and you can email us middaymatters@nipr.fm. Karen Francisco.
Well, post-election, we heard some very sharp words from Governor Daniels and Governor-elect Mike Pence about your win and what it means for the reform agenda in Indiana. What was your thought when you heard what they had to say the day after the election?
I guess my first thought is they don't really know me. I am a consummate advocate for students and what happens in the classroom. And I ran on the platform of I'm an educator, not a politician, and that really is me. And so I plan to work on an education agenda. I said to everyone, I don't care what political party anyone belongs to. I'm going to be focusing on what is right for the classroom. So that's going to be what I do.
And this is in a similar vein of Bob, what you and I were talking about just before the program got going here.
Right. So how far does the actual authority of your position take you towards affecting education policy, and what are your ideas about how to extend your influence beyond that?
Well, education in Indiana comes from three fronts. It comes from the legislature, who actually has Indiana code that gives guidelines and restrictions on what can be done. And then there's Indiana policy for education with the State Board of Education, and I am the chair of that committee. And so moving things forward on an agenda to affect the policy to enact Indiana code. And then there's just the powers of my office. What I can do to support the schools in Indiana through the Department of Education and the staff that works with me in that capacity. So I've known all along, I'm very familiar with the pieces of law, I'm familiar with what is in policy, and I'm familiar with what I might have the purview to do just in the Department of Education. And so I've never said that, you know, I'm out to change all the laws. I actually feel that there are many laws in place that are very doable. It's just a matter of how that law was enacted or implemented, either with policy or through the superintendent's office.
I'm not clear from that answer. Tell me some more about what you can specifically do in your office.
All right, let me give an example. You really have to break it down into issues. So, for example, reading. In Indiana code, it does speak to having reading programs grades K through 3, and that kids will be reading by grade 3, and that's the emphasis. It also says in there that retention will be used as a last resort and really meant for the local school districts to implement that. However, because of that Indiana code, Dr. Bennett enacted several pieces to enact that law that actually put in place pass-fail tests for third graders and more pass-fail tests actually coming up through the ranks from kindergarten through grade 2, and then put in place punitive actions if students did not pass. So if students did not pass, then they would be on a retention list at the state of Indiana, and they would be taking all those assessments next year, whether they were physically moved on by the local corporation or not. So now as the new superintendent, I actually don't have any troubles with the law and do not intend to change anything in the Indiana code regarding early childhood reading. I actually think it's a well-written law and calls for some good parameters of what should be taught. But then the implementation, I want to change how it's implemented. I want to put in some really strong reading program emphasis. I want to not have the pass-fail test, but instead have some strong growth measures so we can see the improvement of the students and, you know, and head towards a little different direction with the implementation of the law. So that's just one example.
So would you expect to be going to the State Board of Education and expressing interest in changing some of the rules, the regulations that have been put in place?
In some cases, that might be necessary, but in other cases, it's not necessary. It's simply an implementation. So, you know, I will have to look at each piece of what has been put in policy, and many times things are not in policy. It's just a matter of implementing what is already in the law. So, you know, I'll have to take it issue by issue. Yes, there will be several things that I'm sure will come before the review of the Indiana Board of Education. I am the chair of that committee, and I'm beginning to meet with the different members of the committee and look forward to that, actually. I've worked with a lot of people in my leadership roles just in Washington Township. I have never gotten to choose the parents I work with or the colleagues or the administration or superintendents or school board members. And I've always been a pretty strong advocate for what's right in the classroom. So I plan to work with the State Board of Education to actually change some direction in which we were headed to implement things in a proactive for what's good in the classroom.
Looks like we have a caller on the line here. And, of course, we invite our listeners to join the conversation this hour. The number is 260-452-1185 or toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Let's open the phones and go to Steve. Steve, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hey, good. This is great. I'm excited to be on.
Thanks very much for being with us. Go ahead.
I have a question. I am a pretty conservative Republican. And I voted for Mike Pence, but I did not vote for Superintendent Bennett. And the reason was, as much as anything, was kind of a repudiation of many of his policies. I'm an educator. I'm a part-time college professor, and I do individual tutoring in addition to my day job. And I really saw what he did as really... I don't feel like I'm being over dramatic in this and calling what he was doing is some of his policies being really destructive, potentially destructive. And what I wondered then is, as somebody who is not on the you know, GOP side of the aisle, what kind of policies do you plan on implementing that somebody like myself, who is conservative, who would feel comfortable with? In other words, you would not have won if Republicans had not crossed the aisle to vote for you.
You are so correct about that. I was really I view my election as a nonpartisan election,
right,
as a referendum on education, and so I really plan to work within most of the parameters that we have within the law to actually implement things in a different way for what's good in the classroom, as I've said previously. But you are exactly right. I was elected by a lot of Republicans. There's only 40% Democrats in the state of Indiana, so a Democrat doesn't win an election unless they have Republicans that are going to actually vote for the policies that the person is running on. So I'm a very inclusive, I have a very inclusive management style. So I plan on working with all the constituencies that I need to work with in order to move education in a better direction for what's right for kids in the classroom. It's everything that I do, I'll be asking myself that question. Is this going to be good for the classroom? If it's not, then I will already know that because I will already have thought opinions. And educators just like you, I hope, are going to be part of that conversation. I'm going to have some real open lines of communication under my leadership.
Well, I'm really excited. my own children are very, very bright, and that gives them a real advantage. But the kids that I work with day to day really have some real disadvantages. And I really see the last state superintendent as having policies that were really discriminatory towards those kids.
Well, we're going to have a real, real strong emphasis statewide on literacy. We're going to have some great reading programs, and it's not just going to be for the little ones. We're going to have some good, strong reading information to give educators and parents on how their students are actually doing in reading. And then we're going to be implementing quite a few what I call literacy activities that will build cultures of readers. Because I truly, truly believe, and I've been working in literacy my entire 33 years, that good readers, when you're a good reader, you will succeed in school, and it crosses all economic levels. It actually equalizes the playing field when you make sure that kids are good readers. So we can't emphasize it just in the younger grades, though, because we get students in our classrooms at every grade level now that have reading issues. Either they're coming into us that way, or they don't speak our language in English, and so they're learning a different, they're learning the language. We have a lot of need for strong emphasis on reading, so I'm looking forward to that.
All right.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Steve, we appreciate your call, and have a very good day.
Hey, thank you.
All right, bye-bye. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment for Glenda Ritz this hour. We do need to take a quick break. We'll continue the discussion when we get back. Stay with us. It's Midday Matters.
On the next Fresh Air, Hilary Mantel talks about her best-selling historical novel, Wolf Hall, and its recent sequel, Bring Up the Bodies, about the formation of the Church of England, the reign of King Henry VIII, and the beheadings he ordered. Each book won the Man Booker Award, Britain's highest literary honor. Join us.
Fresh Air, weekdays at 1 on WBOI.
American Roots celebrates the 2012 National Heritage Fellows, live in Washington, D.C., with music and stories honoring the nation's finest practitioners of traditional arts, including Tejano accordionist Flaco Jimenez, klezmer and bluegrass virtuoso Andy Statman, and dobro master Mike Aldridge. I'm Nick Spitzer. Join me for American Roots from PRX.
Monday night at 7 on WBOI.
Later, singer Michel Ndegeocello pays tribute to the late, great Nina Simone.
Oh, Lord, please don't let me be misunderstood.
She was one of the people, but I felt she was like royalty.
An album dedicated to the sovereign soul of Nina Simone. Later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
That's weekdays starting at 4 on WBOI Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
J.C. Eckhart never worried about infidelity. But after news broke about David Petraeus' affair, she confronted her husband, a naval officer of more than 2 decades of service. Promise me that won't ever happen to us. I'm Neil Cohn, the conversation about infidelity in military marriages. Join us next Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Tune in weekdays at 2 here on WBOI, Northeast Indiana Public Radio.
Good afternoon. The time is 12:25. You're tuned to Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel and Karen Francisco from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. On today's program, we're talking about the future of education in the state of Indiana with Superintendent of Public Instruction-elect Glenda Ritz. And we do want to hear from you this hour. The number to share your questions or comments, 260-452-1185. Of course, you can always call us toll-free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's at Midday Matters. Glenda Ritz, thank you very much again for being with us this hour. We do appreciate it. We have a lot of comments and questions to get to. We'll chat with Carrie, who's on the line, in just a moment. But first, a note from Al, who's a teacher in Fort Wayne. Al says, Glenda, a big thanks for starting to talk about giving the teachers, parents, and citizens of Indiana a voice back into the future of Indiana's public education. We look forward to working with you and helping everyone understand the DOE's policies. That is easy to follow, has input from all, and really gives true support to our schools who need it most. A note of support from Glenda Ritz.
Yeah, thank you. In fact, one of the things that I'm getting ready to do is actually put in place the reorganization that I talked about so much during my campaign. I have actually have a transition team working, and we are going to have 9 regional areas where I'm going to have coordinators. We're going to hire coordinators from the regions in which they work, using the same model as our service centers. The state of Indiana actually implemented education service centers in 1976. And so the regions are already established. We already have those groups working to provide services to school districts more efficiently, working with technology, working with professional development. And I plan to use the same model to implement my regional coordinators.
Let's get back to the phones here. We've had a caller waiting patiently on the line. And, of course, the number to share your thoughts by phone today, it's 260-452-1185. Let's go to Carrie, who's on the line with us. Carrie, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I know that the voucher question is before the state Supreme Court right now, and they're arguing that point. But having said that, first of all, I'm against it, as is a lot of people. But if it survives, I have a very good friend that's a principal of a parochial elementary school, and there's no the first criteria, and this has been said by the superintendent of schools for the Fort Wayne South Bend Archdiocese, that they're going to use to accept students on this is their religion. I find that problematic, as did the principal at Concordia High School say that. And the other thing being, they don't have to have any program for special needs, and they don't have to accept any disciplined child. Now, Phyllis Pond, the legislator from Columbia City, Bell, I think his name is, Bell or Bear, I can't remember which one, and Cruz from the Auburn area, all promised on a PBS Friday night political program that they wouldn't vote for a bill that didn't insist that the voucher program includes special needs programs for the kids. The parochial schools say, well, we don't get government money for that, so we don't have to do it, but they can apply for government money like everybody else. My thing is, I think the criteria should be, the number one criteria should be income. Low-income people come in first. If you're a family of just a couple people making $12,000 a year or $25,000 or whatever it is, you get your first preferences that way. I could see some support from me if it was done that way. And I think there should be special needs programs. I think they should have to accept disciplinary problems and whatever else, just like everybody else. I think we should have a level playing field here. And then quickly, one other thing is online programming, requiring that in the high school level. I think it's good to offer it as an option to kids, but the legislator last year tried but didn't pass requiring online classes. Please don't require online classes. That's not the necessary learning style for every student. And if you want to offer it and some students take it, that's fine, but don't require it. The people supporting this, of course, have been paid by online companies into their campaigns. Anyway, but to the voucher program, I think that's important. So I don't know what you can do about it, but, that's out there. So that's the elephant in the room, I think.
Well, yeah, thank you for your call. You're correct on all of those points. Private schools are not public schools, and so they do not have to abide by the public schools. Whereby we take all children, and no matter who they are, including those of special needs. So requiring private schools to do that would really force them into the public arena, and I don't think anybody would be advocating for that. I plan to have some really strong accountability programs in place. I'm not sure how much oversight has currently been done on the voucher program, and so, but I plan to have some very strict accountability, especially with the income levels, making sure that people qualify, making sure that all of the criteria are met. So I can tell you my office is responsible for that, and so I'll be pursuing that. As I always personally will be in favor of public money going to public schools, and so I won't quit on that aspect. As for the online learning, we already have several online courses being offered in many of our schools, and I am in agreement that they shouldn't be required. First of all, we don't even have access to the proper, Wi-Fi in many of our schools, especially in our rural areas. So requiring something like that really isn't doable.
We appreciate the call, Carrie. We do have more callers to get to in just a moment here, but I did want to check our email as well here. We have a question from Richard. Richard says, please tell me Indiana will advance to the level of other states in regards to doing more than directing dyslexic students to non-skilled trade education. I know that firsthand blending these students with mainstream students is a waste of educational hours for those without afflictions, as well as these students who possess the ability to learn, albeit via a different method. Do we have to rely on charter schools to keep these students from learning how to change and rotate tires?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm a special educator, so I am licensed in special education, general ed, and library science, and I actually taught the gifted students for 6 years, too. And I've taught at all levels K-12. So I guess how I'm going to respond to that is that my vision is that career and tech opportunities are going to be open for all kids. We're not going to track students. Tracking is labeling students and sending them in a particular way in which you think that they are going to succeed. Somebody else is making that decision for them. I want students to have the opportunities when they leave high school that they will have experienced career tech opportunities at all levels, whether they go on to higher education or whether they choose to go right into a vocation. But it needs to be open to everyone. We have students in my local going to career centers who actually are taking courses like in cosmetology, not necessarily to make a career of it, but to earn good money when they graduate from high school to pay their way through higher education. Kids have gotten savvy. They know that they're going to need to have a good source of income to be able to afford any higher level schooling. I'm about giving opportunities to all kids, and they can reach for as far as they want to go. We're going to start that with some good, strong literacy programs, so I'm very sensitive to students who have dyslexia, and that'll be part of what we start to address as well. So we just want to have some good, strong programs so kids have good opportunities when they leave our high schools.
Richard, we appreciate the question here. Appreciate you getting in touch. We do have a caller on the line. Let's go to Diane on line two before we have to get to a break. Diane, welcome to Midday Matters.
Thank you. Appreciate you taking my call. I have two questions, and I'll be glad to take the answer off air. One, will you continue the education roundtable, ma'am? And if you do, will you insist that that table has professional educators sitting around it? Your predecessor did not do that, and I'm, as a 31-year veteran of the classroom, extremely upset with him, and that's part of why you got my vote. Secondly, will you support the A through F grade letter grades that schools are now wearing, much like the Scarlet Letter? Or will you return to the former, a little more benign system? Thank you for your answers.
Diane, we appreciate your call. Glenda Ritz, some big issues.
I'm going to quickly jump on another phone and call right back in. It appears that my landline phone has lost its battery. I'm going to call right back.
Oh, no.
Okay, thank you very much, ma'am, and thank you, sir, for taking my call.
Thank you very much. And folks, sounds like a good time for a break.
The best time for a break.
We'll take a quick break for the news, and then we'll get to those answers here. Of course, if you want to join the conversation, the number is 260-452-1185, or you can always call us toll-free free at 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm. Post on our Facebook wall or send us a tweet. Stay with us. More with Glenda Ritz when we come back. It's Midday Matters.
Support for this program on WBOI is provided by Christine and Ed Schaefer, Broker Realtors with Northeastern Group Realty. Trust the professionals with proven performance. Online at christine-ed.com. The Schaefer Team.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Northeast Indiana Public Radio. I'm Sarah DeLeo with WBOI News. Predictions of stagnant state tax collections and dwindling gambling revenue could dash any hopes agencies and universities have of getting more money when lawmakers write Indiana's next two-year budget. Many groups have seen cuts over the last 4 years, and lawmakers aren't giving them much encouragement as they wearily eye the increased competition for gambling dollars from neighboring states and an economy that's still dragging. Indiana has cash reserves worth an estimated $2 billion, but Senate Appropriations Chairman Luke Kenley says tax collections could grow by just 1.5% over the next year. That could give lawmakers little room to increase spending. New House Ways and Means Chairman Tim Brown says he'll wait to see the December revenue forecast before worrying. A Purdue University agricultural economist says America's role as the world's corn export king is on the decline. Purdue's Philip Abbott says that prior to a 2007-2008 spike in commodity prices, the U.S. exported well over half of the corn that entered international markets. But since then, he says, high corn prices have caused the rest of the world to expand their production and become more self-sufficient. Abbott notes that about 40% of the corn grown in the U.S. is used for ethanol production to comply with a federal standard. Although American farmers have shifted acreage away from other crops and into corn, he says the U.S. hasn't kept up with other nations, such as those in South America, which have significantly increased their corn acreage in recent years. A group that oversees a marsh straddling the Great Lakes and Ohio River basins favors rebuilding a berm to control the spread of Asian carp and other invasive species. Six of the nine options for Eagle Marsh presented by the Army Corps of Engineers call for building a wall, fence, screens, or gates. The state of Indiana built a temporary fence in 2010. The Little River Wetlands Project oversees the marsh. Its director of preserves says it favors either of the two options that tear down existing berms and rebuild them to federal standards because their structures already in place, wildlife is used to them, and they present the least amount of long-term change to the area. A busy weekend at the Coliseum with the Comets and the Mad Ants. WBOI's Doug Gruber has a recap.
Thanksgiving night, the Comets played catch-up. Down 3-1 in the second period, they tied the score at 3-3 at the end of two. Thomas Beauregard's 2-on-1 breakaway goal in the third period gave the Comets a 4-3 win. Friday night in Kalamazoo, the game was tied at 2-2 after two periods, but the Wings scored three times in the final period, down the Comets 5-2. Back at the Coliseum Saturday night, the Comets went down 2-1 after two periods. In period three, Toledo pulled ahead 3-2, then put the puck in an empty net with 3 seconds remaining and a 4-2 win over the Comets. The Mad Ants opened their season Friday night against the Erie BayHawks. A slow start and poor shooting had the Mad Ants down by 15 points after three quarters. They outscored the BayHawks 32-26 in the third quarter, but fell short for a 109-100 loss. Sunday, the Mad Ants hosted the Maine Red Claws, had a 2-point lead after one quarter, but Maine quickly erased that, led the Mad Ants by as many as 14 points in the fourth quarter. Maine down Fort Wayne 117-112. The Mad Ants will try to get their first win this Wednesday night when the Canton Charge visit the Coliseum. For WBOI News, I'm Doug Gruber.
And now back to Midday Matters with your host, Sean Beter.
20 minutes before the top of the hour, 1 o'clock, it's Midday Matters on 89.1 FM. I'm Sean Beter, along with Bob Kaler from the Fort Wayne News Sentinel and Karen Francisco from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. We're talking today about the future of Hoosier education with Superintendent-elect Glenda Ritz. And I know you had to leave because your battery was dying there. You're back with us now. We're very, very happy to have you for the hour.
Okay. I have some responses to those questions.
Let's briefly...
The first was about the roundtable.
Let's briefly remind our...
The roundtable is jointly appointed by the governor and myself, and there most definitely will be some educators on the roundtable. And I do know that there were some educators on the roundtable. They represented some educational entities, I believe. But I do plan to make sure that we're going to have that very professional roundtable established. And then A to F. A to F is very complex. It's not transparent. It has what I call an artificial growth model that has been placed upon a pass-fail test. I hope to move towards a different form of accountability as we move forward with true growth measures for students. Actually knowing the true performance levels of our students and seeing their actual growth within a given year of time. So once we have a different assessment system in place, then we can talk about a fair accountability system that's going to be transparent.
It seems very difficult to me when you're talking about evaluating schools and being able to compare schools, though. If you have an A through F program and you want to get rid of it or modify it, how do you do that in a way that allows schools with very different interests, with very different needs to be compared to one another?
Well, actually, the law does not require schools to be compared to one another. They require schools to be placed into an improvement category. And that's in Public Law 217, and as required also by the U.S. Department of Education. And so that's the first clarification I would make, is that you don't need to compare schools against other schools. You need to compare schools against themselves and talk about their improvement. So those are the kind of categories that we need to be talking about. But I actually want to assess school cultures. Schools are more than test scores, and we need to get about the business of addressing our challenges that we have in different ways in different areas of the state. Rural schools, suburban schools, urban schools, they have vastly different needs and challenges. And the regional coordinators are going to be responsible for starting the process for assessing our school cultures, and then we're going to be looking at the challenges that need to be addressed and putting in supports to do that. So I actually hope that once we get going and get some things in place, that schools will feel like they are improving, and the test scores will show that as well. But we need to be about the assessment of our schools in a much broader perspective, so that we can truly address the challenges.
We have about 15 minutes before the top of the hour, and we do want to invite our listeners to join this conversation with Superintendent of Public Instruction-elect Glenda Ritz this hour. The number, 260-452-1185. If you have a question or comment, you can also call us toll-free, of course, 1-800-471-9264. Email middaymatters@nipr.fm, post on our Facebook wall, or you can always send us a tweet. It's @MiddayMatters, and we'll try to get your question or comment on the air. We did have an email from a few minutes ago from an anonymous emailer. The person says, the popularity of homeschooling is rising both nationally and locally. What are your views on Indiana's regulations regarding education outside of the formal school setting?
Well, homeschooling is an option that many parents choose in the state of Indiana. And, you know, I will say, though, that homeschooling in some of our areas has been misused. We have some people that are actually doing homeschooling and not providing homeschooling. So in terms of having a process by which, people register to do the homeschooling, and I know we have a lot of things in place, I just really want to just take a look at what's in place. To be sure that we're not going to have people that are misusing it and students not actually receiving an education. So that's really all the concerns that I have. I think most of the homeschooling going on is parents are highly capable in the situations that I'm aware of providing the homeschooling for their children and make sure that they've got the proper curriculum and what's needed. So I don't have any vast concerns. I just want to take a look at the regulations that are in place and just make sure that we're not having a misuse of homeschooling.
Looks like we have another caller on the line here. And, of course, we invite our listeners to give us a call if they have a question or comment, 260-452-1185. Let's open the phones and go to Lockwood Marine. Good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hi there. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
I was interested in your comments about culture being important versus test results. I wonder if over a third of the kids in the state are failing tests, isn't that really the important thing, because we're not preparing them for the future regardless of what kind of cultures they're coming from?
No, I don't really mean the cultures of the children coming to the school. I mean the actual culture of the school. In other words, do we have good disciplinary procedures in place, the positive supports? Do we have what kind of programming are the kids being offered? Do we have courses that are going to be career and tech oriented? Do we have what kind of technology does the school offer? What kind of reading programs are in place? When I talk about assessing the culture of the school, that's what I really mean, actually assessing many areas. But you are correct. You do want to look at those assessments and see where kids are falling, because you do want students to be prepared. I guess I would say in the state of Indiana, when we have as many students as we have not being able to pass a pass-fail test, we have a reading problem. In most cases, students are not passing those tests because they cannot read on grade level. And so we need to get about the business of making sure our reading programs and supports and our assessments that go with that are really going to give the information that we need to be able to provide what is needed in our classrooms. For example, if you have an eighth grade class, you should be able to have reading assessment information to let you know as the teacher and the parents to know that you've got 8th grade readers in that class, you've got 10th grade readers in that class, you've got 6th grade readers in that class, to be able to provide the proper resources and support to be sure that everybody is going to be able to read what you provide them and move ahead in their own reading improvement. So I'm actually talking about assessing a lot of different aspects of our schools, making sure that we're providing the supports that are needed, and then also making sure our young people are reading, because that's going to help them the most to succeed in their coursework and to pass the pass-fail test.
All right. Lockwood, we appreciate your call. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Goodbye.
Have a very good day. 10 minutes before the top of the hour here, just a few more minutes. If you have a question or comment for Glenda Ritz, and we do want to hear from you today, the number is 260-452-1185, or you can always call 1-800-471-9264. We have one more caller on the line, and then we need to get to a break. Let's go to Lee. Lee, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Hello. I had heard the possibility that the legislature would be introducing a bill that would make the superintendent's position appointive rather than elective. And although I wish we didn't have to vote along party lines for this particular position, that would concern me.
Well, actually, that there was talk about that. I believe the talk was very brief. The election itself and the overwhelming winning of the election gave pause, and so it's my understanding that that's not going to be on the table. I will tell you there are many states who do appoint the superintendent, but then they elect the State Board of Education. And then there are states who elect the State Board of Ed, and then they appoint the superintendent. I mean the other way. Elect the superintendent and then appoint the State Board of Ed. I'm not aware of states that appoint all of it, and I'm never in favor of that, because you always need a good balance. So I think the way we do it now, I think the voters have been very clear about education and how important it is, and that it should be an elected position. I do agree with you, though, that I'm not, you know, in some aspects you wish it was not a partisan race.
Right.
That it was just the superintendent's race, and you voted for the superintendent you want, not along party lines.
Well, I am looking forward to what will be coming up in the next 4 years.
Well, thank you very much.
Lee, we appreciate your call, and have a very good day.
You too.
Bye-bye. All right, bye-bye. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment this hour. I do think we're going to forego our normal break at this time to get as many listener questions and comments in as we can here. Let's go down the line. We've got Harold on the line. Harold, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
I know you're short on time, so I just liked your comments on a couple of things. I do have a degree in education. I know a lot of teachers, and a number of my friends were upset that our tax dollars are going to private and parochial schools and charter schools. In most cases, teachers are not required to have any kind of licensing or anything like that, and we're picking up the tab. And I also am a firm believer in everything I've read about Diane Revitch and her book, and I just wonder if you want to comment on that. Thank you. I'll take any. Off the air.
Harold,
well,
thank you very much
you,
for
Harold.
The call.
First of all, I'm a big fan of Diane Revitch, and concerning charter schools, I guess I would say that I'm going to be looking forward to having some real accountability with charter schools. I think we need to look into the evaluation of them. I think we need to support those that are working. I actually am a believer of local charter schools as they were first established. I think what has gotten into the mix is something that I would like to see changed, and it would take legislative action, which would be the state board of charters, the charter state board. I don't believe we should have the state determining charters coming in and setting up shop within our state. And those are for-profit companies, and our money is tax dollars are going to those companies for as much profit as they can take. And I really firmly believe that we were in a good place when the local areas decided upon the charters and not the state of Indiana.
All right. Hey, Harold, we do appreciate the call. One more on the line. We have Diane on line 4. Good afternoon, Diane. You're on
Hi.
Midday Matters.
Well, thank you. I'd just like to thank you so much for taking on this huge task. I was very frightened by Bennett. So thank you very much.
Well, you are welcome, and I think I'm actually up for the task.
You sound like it.
Diane, thank you very much for the
You're
call.
Welcome.
All right, bye-bye. 260-452-1185 is the number to call if you have a question or comment just in the last few minutes of the program here. Looks like we have another caller on the line. Let's go to Bobby. Bobby, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters.
Thank you. I am so glad to see Glenn to be in charge of this, the programs. My comment is regarding the day that we had to test some homeschooled children, and I'm not making a statement against all homeschool parents because I know there's a lot I followed of several that were out there doing a very fine job, but this family had not, and we had a fifth grader and a fourth grader and a first grader who came into our school, and none of them were reading at even a first grade reading level. And their homeschooling had consisted of watching Sesame Street, which at least they got to watch that. So my point is that people need to understand that the public schools are getting children of all different kinds and abilities, and homeschooling is one factor, and I think it does need to be regulated much more seriously than it has been regulated in the past. The other comment was that the people around this area do not realize, I don't think, how many different nationalities we have to deal with in the public schools. I mean, it's been talked about, but I'll never forget the day that our principal said, or sent around an email to us saying to be prepared for the 200 families that were Burmese that were coming into our community and to be prepared for those children to enter our schools. And my first thought was, when did we have a class on teaching Burmese children or even speaking Burmese in the classroom? And this happens. We've got more Burmese in our community. I'm not picking on the Burmese, but I'm just saying this. People out there have to realize that the public schools deal with all of the different languages, the economic parts of it, and the abilities, the learning disabilities, and the neglect that goes on in the home for not reading. And they have to understand that, you know, we're working as hard as we can to do the job we've been hired to do. But sometimes, you know, I with these children that came from the homeschool family, we worked and got those children to work to reading at the third grade reading level, finally by the end of the year. But that's working three times as hard with that one child, or in this case, three children, and working three times as hard one-on-one with that individual, and that just doesn't happen.
Yeah, Bobby, you brought up many, 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 many good points. First of all, public educators, we teach all children. All children
right.
who come through our doors, no matter when they come through our doors.
Exactly.
Yes, nationalities, we have 90 nationalities just in my district alone. ENL support has been cut over the last few years, and money was taken from that ENL programs, English as a second language, and actually placed into testing. And so in my budget, I'm hoping to increase the amount of money that we have for support for students who come into our schools needing a second language. Professional development is something that needs to be reinstated. Those line items were cut 4 years ago to all school districts. I plan to run a lot of professional development through those education service centers that I talked about at the start of this program. And, you know, you are correct. People do not understand that we take everyone, and our the diversity of our students in the entire state is very immense. We have diversity everywhere, and we have to have supports to be sure that we're educating all of those children. And thank you for the work that you do in the classroom.
Thank you.
Bobby, thank you very much for the call, and have a good day. Just about 2 minutes left in the program here. We're going to try to squeeze one more question in before we have to wrap up. Let's go to Linda on line three. Linda, good afternoon. You're on Midday Matters. Please be brief if you can.
Hi. I just was wondering, I know that Indiana has adopted the Common Core standards, which I think are probably a good idea. It will help increase kids' reading levels, and I was wondering what your stance on them was.
Well, actually, I don't have a stance on the Common Core per se. Really, what happened in Indiana is we didn't really get to have dialogue about the Common Core. They were implemented very quickly in order to get a U.S. waiver, a United States waiver. And I'm actually having a conversation with the U.S. Department of Education today, this afternoon, to talk a little bit about that waiver. I really can't say whether I'm for it or against it. I just know we need to review it. It was kind of a mandate, you know, from many of the voters to review the Common Core, look at our own standards, see what we might want to do with it. I know the Common Core has been started to be implemented. It's a good time to just take a review of that. I'm hoping to do that and see where we might head, because I will say one thing, though. The state of Indiana belongs to a consortium called PARCC, P-A-R-C-C, that is developing the assessments that will go along with the Common Core.
And Glenda Ritz, just 20 seconds here, please.
Because the PARCC assessments are more the pass-fail approach that we have now. And I'm a firm believer that we need to have some true growth measures. So we do have to have some dialogue around curriculum and assessment.
All right. Linda, we appreciate your call. Thank you very much. And thanks to everybody who's called today. Glenda Ritz is the Superintendent of Public Instruction elect for the state of Indiana. Glenda Ritz, thank you very much for being with us for this hour.
Thank you so much. Anytime.
Thank you also to Karen Francisco and to Bob Kaler for being with us today. Thanks to you for tuning in. I'm Sean Beter, and this is Northeast Indiana Public Radio, broadcasting from the Madge Rothschild Studios. It's 89.1 HD Channel 1 WBOI Fort Wayne. We're coming up on 1 o'clock. Fresh Air is next.